Okay, we're going to reconvene. Came in hot. We're going to reconvene. We've got Carl Lamm is going to be talking about Tower Tilt. Carl's 55-year broadcast engineering career has included large broadcast group transmission systems management, high-power international broadcasting, consulting engineering, and equipment design. He actively supports broadcast technical education initiatives in his mostly retired years. Carl. Thank you.
Okay, it's going to be kind of interesting to see how we do this because I can't really read the screen down there and I may be running two screens at once here, so we'll see what happens. So when you're mostly retired, sometimes you're casting around looking for things to do. Your wife is not around and giving you more things to do. And what I've trying to do in the past few years is pick a topic that hasn't really been covered that I think is interesting and do a deep dive on it. 2 years ago, I did a presentation on reflective power control in massively parallel solid-state transmitters, which was kind of an interesting project. And this time I decided that I wanted to take a look at what happens to station service when a tower is deflected, particularly when that deflection is not intentional. So this was an interesting project that I worked on over the past couple of months. And let's see what we've got. Wrong way. Right way? Okay. So basically, wind deflects towers. The tower deflection causes antenna tilt. The antenna tilt causes service losses and some service gains because the elevation pattern of the antenna varies as it's tilted. Towers not plumb have greater deflection when the wind hits them because they're already deflected a little bit. So we're going to look at the causes of tower deflection, deflection with expected wind, and then the meat of the presentation is the deflection service population impact study, which was done in 14 upper Midwest markets from Detroit to Des Moines and Peoria to Duluth. I calculated service populations for 39 scenarios in each of these 14 markets, and then distilled the data down into average service losses per market and the magnitude of deflection. If we have time, we'll also cover at the end the theoretical basis of deflection losses. Why am I talking about that last? Because that's how I think, and I have college transcripts to prove that that's the way my mind works. Anyway, how much deflection is normal? Some deflection is unavoidable. Deflection is a function of the tower's structural design. The theoretical deflection for assumed, the theoretical deflection for assumed worst case conditions, including icing, is frequently found in the tower structural analysis report, which can contain a graph of deflection versus elevation. Here's a graph for a 1,200 foot tower. In this case, the graph is showing the displacement in inches versus the height of the tower. It's not showing the angle of the tilt, it's just showing how far over the tower is moved under the assumed wind and ice conditions. In this case, it has a tilt of approximately 4/10 of a degree. Here's a 1,510-foot antenna tower, and this one's kind of interesting because the maximum tilt actually occurs in the middle of the tower. This particular analysis printout here was from the TNX Tower software, which most structural consultants and tower manufacturers use. This is a straight tower with multiple antennas on it, multiple side mount antennas. And again, you can, in this case, the center plot is the tilt plot, and if you look at that, you'll see that the maximum tilt is about 3/10 of a degree. The scale is 0 to 1/2. Maximum tilt's at 3/10 of a degree, and that's at the middle of the tower and at the very top of the tower. Here's a 2,000-foot tower with a candelabra on top. In this case, again, a TNX tower printout, graphical printout. The center plot is the tilt versus tower height, and it reaches a maximum of 7/10 of a degree up at the top of the tower at the candelabra. So, towers are designed to minimize deflection. Structural standards used in design analysis include significant wind and ice loading assumptions. Theoretical deflections are typically around 1/2 degree or so. Wind, icing, or mistensioning deflects towers. Again, when that happens, the antenna is mechanically tilted slightly. That also tilts the elevation pattern and modifies it slightly. And so that causes the signal strength to vary from normal conditions near the surface of the Earth. It's increased in some directions and decreased in others. So here we have a couple of typical radiation patterns for high VHF and UHF. The high VHF pattern is shown by the orange plot, and the UHF pattern is shown by the blue plot. Looking at the high VHF pattern, the orange plot, you're 9/10 of a dB down at 2-degree depression angle, and you're 9/10 of a dB, relative field of 9/10 or 1 dB at a 2-degree depression angle, and then you're down 6 dB to 0.49 at a 4-degree depression angle. Compare that to the UHF, where you have, you're down to 0.64 relative field, 4 dB at 2 degrees, and down almost 20 dB at 4 degrees. So the high VHF pattern has a 3 dB beam width of about 4.4 degrees, and the UHF is only 2 degrees. So you can see how if you wobble around that VHF pattern a bit, you don't have very big changes in the relative field out of the antenna. But with the UHF, you don't have to wobble it around very much before you have some very significant changes. And later on in the presentation, again, if we have time, we'll look at a little more of the theory of why that occurs. Now, what are the significance of these various depression angles that we looked at? Okay, well, at a 2-degree depression angle, with a 1,100-foot tower, that corresponds to about a 6-mile distance from the tower. And with a 1,800-foot tower, that corresponds to approximately 9.5 miles from the tower. And so as the depression angles go up, you're getting, of course, closer and closer and closer to the tower. And that drives a lot of what the impact on surface is going to be, because farther out, you're not seeing as much radiation change as you are close in. So, basic fact of tower deflection. When a tower is deflected, say, 1 degree this way, downward, it's deflected 1 degree that way, in the opposite direction, upward. And there's no deflection orthogonally, so tilt it 1 degree downward to the east, the antenna's tilted up 1 degree toward the west, and it's not tilted north or south. Some pattern and elevation observations. The narrower elevation beams are more sensitive to deflection. UHF is more susceptible than VHF. Greater antenna elevation causes more sensitivity to deflection. And there's no impact in directions orthogonal to the direction of deflection. Symmetrical opposite tilt happens in line. So, service population impact study. I looked at 14 upper Midwestern markets. For each market, I defined a typical station. And then I looked at three different deflection scenarios for that typical station's antenna in four different directions and three different receiving scenarios for a total of 39 total scenarios per market. In other words, I calculated the service population for 39 scenarios in each market. I used the FCC's TV study software to do this. 14 upper Midwest markets, Detroit to Des Moines, Peoria to Duluth. Some markets were intentionally omitted. Buildings, not towers, are used in Chicago, so that wasn't really relevant to the study. And in some markets, there was substantial site diversity, so an average station really couldn't be derived for them, like Grand Rapids, Lansing, my market, Traverse City, Cadillac, where I live, Marquette, Eau Claire, Wausau, and so forth. In Rockford, there just weren't enough stations to get a meaningful average. Okay, so a typical station in each market was assumed to operate on the averaged UHF or, where applicable, VHF channel. And that channel was used regardless of whether it was occupied in the market. A hypothetical transmitter site located at the centroid of all the sites in the market was used. If there were some outlier sites, I just deleted them and didn't include them in calculating the centroid. I used an averaged radiation center elevation based on both the UHF and VHF stations, except in Duluth, where their VHFs and UHFs were a bit different. And I used an average antenna slot or bay count and electrical tilt for each market. Whose antennas did I use in doing these calculations? Whose elevation patterns? Well, I looked at what was being used, antennas were being used in the market, and kind of looked at them and said, well, this is what the market consensus is. This is what's going on here. So for example, in the Twin Cities, I used top-mounted antennas, a top-mounted antenna assumption. And in the Quad Cities, I used a panel antenna assumption, because most of the stations in the Quad Cities were on the panel antenna. And in all of these, I assume omnidirectional operation. Again, the purpose of this study is not look at what happens to one particular station or really one particular market, but look at in the aggregate of the whole and see what these data tell us about tower deflection. So again, a typical UHF station was defined in all markets. Most markets have no more than one VHF, and so VHF was ignored in those markets because this deflection is not as critical as it is in UHF. In Des Moines and Duluth, I looked at the VHFs as well, three VHF stations in Des Moines and two in Duluth. So this is the typical station data. I'm not going to go through this. You know, you want to look at it in detail and see what assumptions I use. You can see it in the slide deck that'll be available after the clinic. So I did the analysis using TV study. What is TV study? It's the FCC's multipurpose TV service and analysis software. It is based on the FCC OET bulletin number 69 DTV analysis procedures. It uses the NTIA Integrated Terrain Propagation Model, also known as Longley Rice, and nearly all analysis parameters in TV study can be configured to whatever you want them to be, facilitating many tasks besides just calculating interference between stations, which was why TV study was created in the first place. So I looked at 13 hypothetical deflection scenarios in each market. I looked at no deflection with minimal wind, half degree deflection, which is a kind of a normal variation, normal wind conditions, icing, et cetera. And I looked at that half degree deflection going with it deflected north, south, east, and west. I did the same thing with 1 degree deflection, which is typical of wind and ice near the design limit of the tower, and 1.5 degree deflection, which assumes that the tower is not plumb and the wind's blowing and there's ice on the tower. I looked at 3 receiving scenarios per market: rural, suburban, and urban. I assumed different receiving antenna heights in each. The standard 33 feet in rural areas, 13 feet typical of a rooftop and for suburban, and 6.5 feet for urban, typical of an indoor receiving situation. Minimum signal strengths used were different in each of these scenarios, and the variability statistics were also a little different in each. So rural is the standard FCC presumption with respect to height and variabilities, but I used a 48 dBU signal threshold rather than 41, which is what the FCC rules specify. The signal thresholds I used were based on receiver antenna gain, antenna coax mismatch, coax loss, building penetration loss, especially for the indoor urban condition, noise components, and multipath effects. The FCC's thresholds of 41 dBU for UHF and 36 dBU for VHF ignore building penetration loss, they ignore antenna coax mismatch, they ignore multipath effects, and especially for the case of an indoor reception, the antenna gain is overly optimistic. So that's why I didn't use those numbers. And if you can get me and Doug Lung and Bill Mintel in a room and say, what should these numbers be? Well, we could spend all day talking about how they should be up to 6 dB one way or the other, but you know, pretty much this is kind of the middle of what we talk about. So in setting up TV study, I did not consider any interference. I did consider terrain blockage and attenuation. I did not look at land use and land cover losses, mainly because I just didn't think of it at the time. I could have. TV study uses 2010 census population data. Would the results be different in 2020? I doubt it. I used a 0.2 kilometer terrain sampling interval in TV study and 0.5 kilometer study cell size. Those were done to get real high resolution in the data. So you get this vast amount of data, and what do you do with it? Well, you put it in a spreadsheet and calculate the service loss percentages for each of the 36 deflection scenarios per market. So again, 3 deflections for each direction in each receiving scenario, 3 receiving scenarios, 4 directions per receiving scenario. So you end up having 39 data points per market, 78 if high VHF is included, as in Des Moines. Processing the data, I came up with an average of average impact of the 4 directions, northeast, southwest, 4 different tilts, and then had those averages for each receiving scenario and each deflection amount. So 9 average loss percentages per UHF market and 18 in Des Moines, where we had VHF added in. So normal deflection analysis results. This is based on 0.5 degree to 1 degree antenna deflection. It correlates with the worst case structural analysis results and assumes that the tower is plumb throughout the aperture if the wind's not blowing. Here's the summary data. And it varies to some extent from market to market, but if you look at all at the overall average down here, the overall average 9, you see that the service population loss for 0.5 degree of deflection is 0.1% for rural, 0.5% for suburban, and just under 1% for urban indoor. And if you look down at high VHF, Duluth and Des Moines high VHF numbers, you see that you're looking at 0.1% loss in the rural case, same thing for the suburban, and 0.2% for urban. So there's not a whole lot of impact on high VHF. With a degree of deflection, we're looking at some slightly higher numbers, just over 0.5% for rural, 1.5% for suburban, and 4.5% for urban in UHF, and then 0.2% rural, 0.1% suburban, and just under a percent indoor for high VHF. So there's not a high VHF. There's just really not much impact, and in UHF, the more tilt, the more impact. But still, we're not looking at radically big numbers here. So let's take a look at the data in a more visual way. The x-axis is the tower, the height above average terrain, and the y-axis is the percentage loss. The orange dots are for 0.5 degree deflection, and the blue dots are for 1 degree deflection. And you can see that, with the exception of a couple of these, the numbers are under 1% most of the way across for rural service. Milwaukee's a little bit of an exception. It's an outlier. Why is it an outlier? Because the Milwaukee stations can be received in northern Illinois, northern suburbs of Chicago. So if you do anything that reduces the signal strength there, that's a significant population that's going to fall off. That's why Milwaukee's a little bit of an outlier. You don't see a whole lot of correlation with service loss versus height above average terrain. You see kind of a little bit of a trend toward it, over toward the right side. The blue dots tend to taper off to the right just a little bit. So let's look at the suburban situation. Here we have some outliers again, Milwaukee for the reason noted before, and Quad Cities, which is, I think, due to overlap with Cedar Rapids. But the data's more scattered. You really don't see any correlation here between height and service loss. And the service loss in suburban case is mostly under a percent, and within 2% definitely for all except the outlying cases. Now, urban indoor reception. Here's where things start to separate out a little bit and scatter a bit more. The orange dots, 0.5 degree deflection, you can just see the beginnings of a trend toward more impact from higher tower situations. That's not so true for the 1 degree deflection. And why is that? Why aren't we seeing a trend there? Mainly due to population distribution in a given market, and which can vary quite a bit from market to market. So now let's look at what happens when the tower is out of plumb and the tower tilts a little bit. You have somewhere between 0.5 degree and 1 degree of static structural deflection. The tower ain't plumb. You have 0.5 degree to 1 degree of deflection caused by wind and ice loading. So you have a total deflection of the tower of about 1.5 degrees. So here's the summary data, and you start seeing some interesting numbers for rural service. The worst case you see for the UHFs is 4.5%, but for urban service, it can range up to 24%. Looking at the high VHF data, again, there's not a whole lot of impact. Looking at 0.5% rural, less than 0.5% suburban, and under 2% urban indoor. There's a lot of variation within each of these columns, though, from market to market. And again, that's driven mostly by population distribution variations within the markets. But the numbers are greater, and they can become significant, especially for the indoor urban service case. So let's take a look at these on the scatter graph. In this particular scatter graph, again, the horizontal axis is height above average terrain, and the vertical axis is service loss. The rural data points are in green, suburban in blue, and the urban indoor points are in orange. And you can see that for rural and suburban service, the numbers are all pretty much below 5%. But then when you start looking at urban indoor service, you're seeing service loss as you start increasing the tower height. And you can see a definite trend there where the greater the tower height, the more likely you're going to have significant service loss when the tower's out of plumb and the wind's blowing and there's some ice on it. How do the results correlate with the number of slots or bays in the antenna? The more slots or bays you have, the narrower the beam. The narrower the beam, the greater the variation with a little of relative field with a little bit of tower deflection variation. So here we have the same kind of a thing, but we're looking at the horizontal axis being slot or bay count, and the vertical axis, once again, being a percentage loss, and the dots are the same. And you see a little more correlation, slight downward tilt for rural service and suburban service, and just like for the height, you see a lot of sensitivity to the number of slots or bays. With the more that you have, the greater the service loss may be. So, how does this happen? It happens because the antenna is mechanically tilted by tower deflection. The elevation pattern is shifted by that tilt, and the signal strength along the ground changes. And why is urban indoor service impacted the most? Well, you can see from the next few slides basically the theoretical basis of why that happens. Let's go back to our typical elevation radiation pattern slide, and you can see that for the UHF antenna, the most steepest slope, the greatest change in radiation versus deflection angle is happening between a little over 1 degree and 4 degrees. This is both of these antennas, by the way, have three quarters of a degree of beam tilt. For VHF, it's spread out quite a bit more. You're going from a couple degrees all the way out to about 10 degrees. Another way to look at this is the slope of the elevation pattern. This is how much change in radiation you have for an incremental change in depression angle. So you can see that in the UHF case, the orange plot, that peaks at a little over 3.5 degrees of depression angle. In the UHF case, that peaks at 2 degrees of depression angle. Now, if you look to the left of zero, you can see some things get kind of crazy, especially in UHF when you're looking at an actual upward angle. But since we're not in the mountains here in the Midwest, we don't worry about upward angles. California, yeah, I worry about that. When I was designing, specifying antennas for use on mountaintops in Colorado and California, the upward tilt was sometimes something that had to be paid attention to. So let's look at how those depression angles, again, correlate with distances. So 2 degrees is where the UHF antenna had its steepest slope, its greatest sensitivity to radiation change as the deflection is varied. And at 2 degrees, that corresponds, looking for 1,100 foot tower, which is about the average of all of them, that happens at approximately 6 miles out. So within 6 miles is where you're going to have issues with 1,100-foot tower. With an 1,800-foot tower, that extends farther outward to about 9.5 miles. The UHF area of concern goes down to a deflection angle of 4 degrees, which is about 2 miles out for the 1,100-foot tower, and it's about 3.5 out for the 1,800-foot tower. So you have a range of about from two, anywhere from, depending on tower height, you have a range of 2 to 9.5 miles maximum where the service is likely to be impacted by that steep slope of the elevation pattern. High VHF is a little is different. It's not nearly as bad. You look at high VHF and its maximum slope occurs at about 3.5 degrees, which an 1,100-foot tower, that's about 3.5 miles out, and for a 1,800-foot tower is about 5.5 miles out. So, you're and then the VHF variations of slope continue out through 10 degrees, and 10 degrees correlates with anywhere from just between 1 and 2 miles from the site. So in VHF, the high VHF, most of the impact's happening within a few miles of the site, whereas UHF can extend up to 10 miles from the site. This is one of the reasons you see a big difference between high VHF and UHF. So let's take a look, look at the deflection impact on a high VHF antenna elevation pattern. Again, back to the overview of deflection, you deflect the tower 1 degree to the east. That means it's downward. It's going to be upward 1 degree to the west, and there's no deflection north or south. So the right graph is elevation pattern with the depression angle as the vertical axis and the relative field as the horizontal axis. The right side of the plot is for the antenna tilted downward 1 degree. That's the orange plot. The black plot is the untilted elevation pattern. And the left side of that is the corresponding upward tilt of the antenna 1 degree. So out of the radio horizon, we have a loss of 0.9 dB to the east, 0.3 dB to the west. No changes north or south. 9 miles out, you have an increase of 0.2 dB to the east and a decrease of 1.3 to the west. And 13 miles out, 0.3 dB loss eastward, 0.8 westward. So there's not a whole lot of difference. Again, the impact in high VHF is not particularly high, and that's because the elevation pattern's pretty wide. Now let's look at UHF. Narrower beam, again, same situation overall, to, you know, tilt it 1 degree to the east and down, and it goes up 1 degree to the west. And the same thing over here on the plots. The black is normal. The orange is the 1 degree downward tilt to the east, and the blue is the 1 degree upward tilt to the west. So in this particular case, with the tower, with the antenna tilted 1 degree, you have a loss at the horizon of almost 5 dB to the east and about almost 1.5 to the west. 9 miles out, you have a loss of, or gain of 0.8 dB, just under a dB to the east, and a loss of almost 6 dB to the west. 13 miles out, you have a loss of 1.5 to the east and almost 4 to the west. So bigger numbers than UHF. This is not surprising given the steeper slope of the elevation pattern in UHF because of the higher gain of the antenna. So here's another, in this slide we're going to take a look at how much the signal strength varies versus the depression angle. So this is looking at, okay, if I have an antenna, if I have a depression angle of 4 degrees and the antenna's not tilted, I have a relative field of X, And if I tilt it 1 degree, I have a relative field of y, and what's the difference between x and y in dBs? Well, for the VHF case, and I apologize for the blue and the orange being reversed here from what they were in the prior slide. This is what happens when you don't have an independent person to steer at your product and go, oh, that's wrong. But anyway, in the case of these plots, downward tilt of 1 degree is in blue and upward tilt is in orange. For VHF, you look at that top graph and you see that nothing really gets outside of 5 dB. And close in from, you know, one to depression angles of from 0 to 3, you know, it's staying under 3 dB. Now, you look at the bottom, you're looking at the same thing in UHF. And you can see deviations of up to 10 dB from the normal condition. In the downward tilt, it's at around a little over 3 degrees. In the upward tilt, it's around 2 and 2.5 degrees. And that kind of, when you get down to depression angles of 6 to 8 degrees, that kind of flattens out. That's because of the nature of the dielectric patterns that I used here. So the data over on the right, same data we saw on the last slide, but just put up there to give some perspective. And once again, high VHF is much less impacted by intended deflection than UHF is. So, again, what are our takeaways from an electronic perspective? UHF is much more sensitive to deflection than VHF. The greatest VHF impact is at 8 to 11 degrees depression, or 1 to 2 miles from the tower for an 1,100 foot tower. The greatest UHF impact is from 1 to 4 degrees of depression, which is 3 to 11 miles from the tower. Tower deflection mainly impacts urban service where indoor antennas are in use. This is because the largest radiation variations are closest to the transmitter site. Service from the tallest towers and the highest gain antennas is more vulnerable to deflection impact. But the difference in elevation pattern within a given band is not as big as one might think. I didn't put the data up on a slide, but in Milwaukee, the smallest antenna is 22 slots, and the longest antenna is 35 slots. So I ran the population data for Milwaukee, in addition to running it for the average antenna, I ran it for the 35 and the 22 and compared them, and the percentage differences were under 5%. I think it was about 3.5% for urban indoor, and of course, significantly less for suburban and rural. So, does a narrow beam antenna make things more sensitive to tower deflection? Yes. Does it make a 10 or 20% difference? No. So, the population distribution, and again, population distribution has a significant impact on the results. Now, I'll mention another kind of flaw in this analysis is that when I did these calculations and the antenna was tilted, you had some service increases in some directions and losses in others. In reality, you don't get a service increase. You only get service losses because people who can't receive you when your tower is perfectly plumb are not going to go looking for you when the tower is tilted. Unfortunately, the amount of post-processing necessary to make that distinction was something I certainly didn't have time for and probably take a good month to do, unless you really had a good automated way of doing it. So my gut feel is that you should take these numbers and probably add about the numbers that are in the chart and in the table and maybe add about a third to them to get a sense of what the real impact might be, because you take out the signal strength increase factors. I think it's probably about a third difference, but and again, it doesn't change the conclusions, it just changes the overall numbers. So, what should you do? Look at your tower from a distance regularly. Deflections of 1 degree are readily visible from the human eye. Know your tower's sensitivity to wind-caused deflection. Refer to the structural analysis report that was done last time the tower was studied. It's probably somewhere buried in there, is the graph that shows tilt versus height under the assumed wind and ice conditions. Lastly, have a qualified rigging crew check tower plumbing guy wire tensions at least annually. This is important not only in terms of the deflection impact on service, but on the structural integrity of the tower, because if the tower is out of plumb, the structural elements of the tower are going to be under different stresses, and some of them may be overstressed, and that's not a pleasant situation when you reach the plastic deformation limit and the steel breaks and try explaining that to your general manager. So anyway, again, look at the tower from a distance, have the tower crew check its plumb regularly if it's your tower, if it's a leased tower, beat on your tower's owner to do that. That's it. Any questions? No?
You say that we should have our tower plumbness checked annually. How many stations do that, and roughly what does it cost?
Could you come over or speak up a little bit? I didn't quite catch that.
How much does it cost to get your tower plumbness checked?
I haven't done this in like 7 years or so. So any number I would give you would be incorrect. But tower crews are never cheap. You know, you're not looking at hundreds, you're looking at thousands of dollars. Are you looking at tens of thousands of dollars? Probably not. But it isn't an expensive thing to do, but it's a hell of a lot cheaper than replacing a tower that fell down.
Well, I can say I just had mine inspected and then I had a P&T done. I think off time it was about $12,500 for everything. But that included like the full inspection and full plumbing and tensioning.
Yeah, one of the neat things about, you know, inspections now is with respect to what they were when I started my career is increasingly the tower crews are using drones to do video on the tower, and then they can sit back at the desk and spend hours looking at it if they want to and get a lot more thorough view of things than you do when you're climbing the tower and making written notes as you go.
Anyone else?
Okay, if anybody wants to see the detailed information on any of the markets, let me know. I've got the spreadsheet on my computer. I can show it to you. Thank you.